Welcome to a podcast on fire, and we are back. Last time you spoke with Tom, that was his big follow-up podcast, and he's getting warmed up, the new co-hosts are getting warmed up, and therefore we are back with the second new co-host who joins me tonight. So it's Kenneth Bolson, your host, and with me is therefore David Harris.
Hello, Ken.
Hong Kong Dave, my favorite Hong Kong Dave.
Oh, that's good.
the only Hong Kong Dave I know, but still my favorite.
That's so. All right. That's all good.
You're unique, sir.
Oh, that's nice
okay.
to know.
Okay. Yeah, nice to know. I don't think that. Alrighty. Settling in nicely, I'm sure, and therefore you know it's contact information first and foremost. So you're listening to Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network, the mighty Podcast on Fire Network, the expanding Podcast on Fire Network, located at podcastonfire.com. We have a message forum where you can interact with us. It's located at podcastonfire.com/forum. And not only are the members good, the members only archive is really good. And for instance, the commentary we just did that we're going to talk a little bit about has a mighty members only extra, mighty members only extra. So extend your POF experience by registering free on the forum and talk with us and check in the members only stuff. Check out the members only stuff, Robert. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/POF network. Like our page, check out what we're doing over there. As well as on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. My links, I am the sole writer and the creator of SoGoodReviews.com. I'm actually the only writer because no one in their right mind would write for SoGoodReviews.com. It's that mad. And I'm a Nazi when it comes to my own site anyway, so. It's category free, you see what I did there? Guilo Ninjas, Hong Kong, Taiwan, old school horror, 70s and 80s stuff. And also the Taiwan new wave of the 70s and 80s that many people have forgotten about. That I'm aiming to cover on SoGoodReviews.com and SleazyKVideo.com in video review form. And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. You can subscribe to Podcast on Fire on iTunes. You'll have the link in the show post to the iTunes feed, as well as on the site at all times. And you can also listen to us on Stitcher Radio, located at stitcher.com. A mobile app for various phones, most known phones, I guess. I have mine on iPhone. And download it, listen to us on the go, type in Podcast on Fire Network and add all shows individually and have us ready to go on the go. So stitcher.com. And you can also download this to your computer if you like. And that's about it. We are going into network updates. And as I said, it's a follow-up episode, so we're going to chat with David Little to see what the experience been like so far. So that is the question. How's the experience been so far being on the network?
Yeah, it's been fun. The first one was a little nerve-wracking, but you know, with the commentary, I kind of feel a bit more settled, and you know, I'm starting to enjoy myself, so it's good.
You didn't come off as feeling nervous during that first show, you know. That was all good, that was all natural, so don't worry about that. Yeah, and as you alluded to, we've done, of course, at the time of recording your initial show, and the undefeatable commentary, that's the big thing. And I wanted to do that quickly to engage sort of the research gear to test if Tom and you would kind of respond. And of course, you know, there was never like a 50-50 doubt in my mind or anything like that. But I'm really glad and thankful that you guys got it. You got my intent, my need for maintaining a standard of, on the shows, of the network. That mix of info and fun on the commentary in this case. And yet you didn't find it to be like a stressful process to sort of follow my lead, to follow my guidelines. You responded very well to this. So, I don't know, did it help being a listener first to understand the show and the process that goes into an episode, or what do you think, David?
Yeah, totally, really, actually. From my point of view, at least, it's a combination of having respect for and enjoyment of the work that's gone before on Podcast on Foreign Network, and you know, not wanting to let the side down slash look like an idiot. So I wanted to make a sort of a contribution that was a worthwhile contribution, and like I was saying, I definitely felt more at ease with the process after the after the initial audition tape while I was doing the commentary. That definitely felt a lot more at ease.
Mm-hmm.
And if that process continues, if I get to feel more at ease with the recording process, and I sort of up my game and my contributions, I think I'll be happy, and hopefully the listeners will too. So
I mean, you maintained a level immediately in terms of providing the research that I couldn't ask for more, and if I get more, that's a great bonus. It's in all honesty, my communication sometimes to my environment is not the best. It sounds good in my head when I'm about to write it, but not all people are receptive to all people, it might have been that we had to work to kind of tune and really grind to get us all on the same page, but that wasn't needed. That was what I was so happy about, creating the Undefeatable commentary research notes, that this is the fastest the commentary has ever been put together. And I'm not saying it was due to us three working on it was due to us three being in sync, understanding what needs to be done.
I like that approach, when we're doing doing this kind of thing, just to be like be to the point, I do one, I'll do a bio, Tom will do one, and just kind of dish out the sort of the work, the research.
Mm-hmm.
And we just get on with it, and just get things going.
Mm-hmm. And it's always I'm not at all the boss of the network or anything, but it's always good to have someone who like steers the boat, moderates the research process, and of course moderates the commentary, I always said was a, without saying it, I felt it was a need for commentary for it to work well. I think being a fan of commentaries when getting DVDs initially at the end of the 90s, I realized after a few years what makes a good and what makes a bad commentary. People think like, oh, it's a party atmosphere for certain movies, but a party atmosphere sometimes doesn't translate into information that I want. It might be a fun movie, but I want to know about this movie. There's few commentaries, and I only know of one that actually managed to be a party, a drunken party, and still be informative. If you ever heard the commentary for Trey Parker's Cannibal the Musical, which is their first feature-length movie, it was distributed by Troma, they were bust already when they started the commentary and got really, really fucking drunk at the end of it. And still, Trey in particular, one of the main guys who created South Park, obviously, along with Matt Stone, he kept it on point as much as he could. But, I learned some stuff, and I had a blast listening to these guys fart on camera and fart on each other. And, at the end of it, what if they give out, like, awards for commentaries? This is the best commentary ever. Titty bar! It's a classic definitely commentary. So, it can be fun, but a mix of info and fun. That's my
favorite. I think you can have a certain amount of, kind of veering off of the path. But eventually, you have to get back on it and, provide, information to, to the listener. So,
Were you ever a fan of listening to commentaries and stuff on DVDs?
Sometimes, it depends. It depends who's involved. I've heard some shockers. I think the one on the US DVD of the Untold Story. It's I can't think who it is. But
it's Miles Wood is on both doing one with Herman Yao and one with Anthony Wong. It's kind of a slow going thing. They should have edited that into one track, to be honest.
It was fairly hard work to listen to. But I mean, that's, you know, and anyone who's famously quite, quite a sort of, you know, reticent kind of person, and, you know, you have to be quite skilled to sort of, you know, pull things out of him and, you know, get him into it, you know.
Yeah, and I do like Miles. I think his sensibilities and his tastes is very good, and he's done. He did well together with Jude Poyer on the Story of Ricky commentary. This would be a good segue soon, actually. But yeah, who knows what went into that one, if they even got good time to prep and all of that. But
yeah, it's gonna be difficult.
But then again, you have like stinkers like Stephen Hammond doing commentaries for Hong Kong Legends, where he just narrates the movie. And The Postman Strikes Back was one such commentary, apparently. So, you know, what the hell? And who knows if HKL even communicated well with him in terms of, you know, you need to provide research and all of that. But I think, without boasting, that our lineup of commentaries actually beats a few commentaries here and there that are on official DVDs that were actually where participants were paid to do it. I think we've you know, risen above other commentary standards at points.
And
regardless of if we get paid or not, I don't really care. I take pride in the fact that we in the end managed to deliver a fair commentary, at least.
Yeah, I think so.
If anything, the most the one I'm proud of, the most proud of that I thought went really well, was Scared Stiff, who had together with Stu and me.
Oh, that's the Chow Yun Fat.
The genre bender, if you will.
Yeah, it's like just a little bit of everything.
Yeah, the partial the Dreamscape reimagining, which was all fun. It was just a movie like me and Stu always responded well to, and we managed to be on point all throughout, get all our notes out, and it was just such good fun, fun to react to the stuff within it, because it's a mighty gory film at points, and discussing why it's so insane to have Giant Fat in a you know, a villain role. He's the killer in that one, as it turns out, and having an end fight where in a scrapyard where MewQY turns on his ESP powers and goes fucking batshit crazy, and it was just wonderful. And sometimes those movies that you admire a whole hell of a lot, you might have too much admiration for it that you just turn up empty. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if something's, you know, almost like too familiar, it's hard maybe sometimes to, you know, to find something fresh to talk about.
Yeah, it's certainly true for a lot of classics. That's why I won't review the likes of Bullet in the Head and certain movies that I really, really love. It's just that I can't bring myself to feel that it's fresh to bring out the review nowadays. I have love for it. I have a lot to say about it, but I won't. It's a strain, and a strain is equal to don't do it. In the case of reviewing movies for my site, I'd rather turn to something that is fun. For instance, at this time tomorrow, I'm re-reviewing an IFD movie called Dragon Against Vampire, which is a full movie they bought from Korea, and it's a mix of martial arts, horror, and exploitation. It's rather cool, actually, and I'd rather do that. And there's no strain involved surrounding that process at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to sort of give people some a perspective or some information on a film that they either maybe don't know about at all, or don't know very much about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just give them a little look, you know, look into, you know, a little look into the film, a little some, you know, information, some perspective or two.
Yeah, I mean, it's a movie where the vampire sucks blood out of women's vaginas, so obviously that needs to be shown to the world. It doesn't have a sequence as graphic as that, but it's what happens, among other things, in the movie. So obviously,
excellent.
And IFD knew what they were doing when they picked it up, so good on them. Right, though, talking about, again, the segue to Story of Ricky, and still on, like, network updates. We are recording some shows in advance, so pardon us if we're talking about planned shows that have, as a matter of fact, been recorded and maybe released. But the closest plans, though, remains the debut of the director's series. And I think, unless someone comes up with a different name, I think I'm sticking with this because it's quote-unquote a bit more classy show. It's a bit more serious show where we highlight directors that people... don't know if they know several of the films, but not necessarily the directors behind them and or the track record that a certain director has. And the story of Ricky's director, Nam Nai Choi, certainly has a lot more going for him than just that gore fest that I don't think is even his best movie. I it may be his fifth best movie or something like that, in my opinion. I like the gore doesn't do it all for that movie, in my opinion. I think the energy is his trademark. But the reason I'm sticking with the director series and not like Director on Fire or some good pun, it's that, you know, why not a straightforward name for something sincere in terms of what the show is about? You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, the name's spot on for me. It's yeah.
And so Nam Nai Choi is the first out of the gate story of Ricky Director, and there's not super many movies on his resume. I think 7 or 8 or something like that as director. And I think in this case, we're going to plow through them all. If we can find them all, I think there's one that at least I don't have. I'm going to check with King Hu to see if he has it. But otherwise, his filmography is so fascinating to an extent that it's worth going through. And therefore, each director will have multiple episodes. We'll be doing dual reviews, as it looks now anyway. And, you know, let's get to know people behind movies that are known and expand the view and views on certain directors from Hong Kong cinema, Taiwan, what have you, especially if they have many different movies under their belt that people simply don't know about or never in their wildest dreams imagined they were capable of. You know, Story of Ricky, I think, is a movie that is both, you know, laughed at and laughed along with. But these people that do that, they perhaps don't know that he has cool action movies under his belt, good-looking ones, good classy ones, and rape revenge movies, and just sci-fi energy to spare. You know what I mean? So I'm looking forward to it. So how do you feel about, you know, in the case of this show and this filmmaker and about the concept of the show?
Yeah, I mean, I like it a lot. I mean, we've not even recorded the opening show yet, but I've already been kind of turning over in my mind, you know, who the next candidate might be, you know.
Cause, right, let's hear it.
I don't know, I've really not thought of anyone in particular, but just the idea of the show and
Jackie Chan. People don't know about him.
Just, you know, the idea of going through you know, a director's filmography and it's kind of see, you know, examining their work in greater detail. I really love the idea. I mean,
some directors may have made 50 movies though, so you have to be selective, yeah, though. But still, if let's say if a director made 20 movies, 20 of which were martial arts classics, and the other 10 were kind of genre, different genre and genre benders, I would love to just focus on maybe the 2 or 3 classics of that director and then turn to the odd stuff that people didn't know existed. And I've got a perfect example, actually. A director called, out of Taiwan, called Lee Chiu Nam, is one such example. Director of Shaolin vs. Lama.
Yeah.
Also, Challenge of the Lady Ninja, Killing in the Nude, Eagle's Claw, a classic. Right, yeah. Yeah, and he has different stuff on his resume that is really cool. Even some serious martial arts stuff that is actually, you know, has some depth to it. So, but that was a fairly frequent director that you can't really, you know, for the show, it's not really logical to look at every martial arts movie because I think some of them are the same. But again, based on availability, we also have to kind of pick and choose in terms of a director, but still you'll be able to have a through line though in some way, you know, to get a good overview of a particular director, even if you pick and choose.
Yeah, I mean, for Nam Nai Choi, I've been looking ahead in his filmography, you know, beyond the two films we'll be talking about on the first show, and it's genuinely exciting because he really mixed things up, you know, during his career.
Were you at all familiar with his work before?
I have seen. Oh wow! Now let me think. Definitely, I saw Story of Ricky.
Mm-hmm. Seventh Curse, by any chance?
Yeah, Seventh Curse, yeah. And Her Vengeance as well.
Right. Which is all good, nice, and versatile already.
Yeah, I mean,
with those movies. But, you know, when we get, I think the gem of the bunch, for me, aside from my favorite, which is The Cat, my favorite out of the bunch, that I discovered was Men from the Gutter, his Shaw Brothers actioner that we'll be covering for the second show. It's a fantastic action movie. Fantastic. Gritty and gory and just well staged as hell. And, you know, that's all thanks to Shaw Brothers to an extent, yeah, but, you know, this is the guy who headed it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the UK, I mean, we've obviously had Story of Ricky like mm-hmm. most places have, and we had Seventh Curse. I think that's it pretty much. I mean, I picked up Her Vengeance when I was in Hong Kong. So. Mm-hmm. Cause I saw Lam Ching Ying on the cover, so I thought, you know, that was a good enough reason for me. So.
Wheelchair Kung Fu, motherfucker.
Yeah, that is really good.
I have the VHS of Seven Curse that MIA did, if I'm not mistaken. They put the right director on it, but the problem with Nam Night Choi is the variations of his Chinese name in Cantonese and Mandarin have been all over the place. It's never been the same for one movie, it seems. So people are not really sure, you know, who he is when you say Nam Night Choi or Simon Nam or Lan Wei Chang. Sang, rather, that is on the MIA tape. It was such good fun. This tape is actually cut for nudity, I believe. There's a scene where a girl carves something out of her breast to feed to Chin Su Ho, who is sick. She has something in her breast. It's kind of a supernatural thingy. But still, a splatterific supernatural yarn, as the back cover says, you know. Who doesn't like that?
Yeah.
And show-stopping midnight movie, it says on the front as well. That's true.
Yeah.
And Chai Fat with a rocket launcher, it doesn't say that, but that's also what we get. Chai Fat with a pipe and a rocket launcher. Classic. And there's even nudity on the front cover here on the MIA VHS. Despite the nudity being cut off, they got nudity on the front cover, so right on. It's going to be so much fun. Stu did the commentary for Seventh Curse along with his friends, kind of an experimental drunken fast food kind of a time, so it's not like we're going to replace the commentary, but they weren't trying out or aiming to do a sort of mix of research info. He wanted to get together his friends to watch a Crazy Asian movie, which is was the intent of that show, which was all good fun. So I'm not we're not skipping ahead, skipping over Seventh Curse, we're gonna let those two coexist, and they should, the director series on it and the commentary of the Scotsman on Fire, if you will.
Yeah, that's the Hong Kong DVD of Seventh Curse is actually getting fairly hard to find.
Yeah, it's an old Universe DVD, and Fortune Star, who has it, I think. I don't know. Didn't Joyce has to do a DVD of it?
They did one of those legendary collections.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, like yourself, I did have the VHS, but you know, and I've not actually had a DVD for ages. So when I knew we were going to be doing this, I went looking for it, and it was, you know, some places like have it as, you know, it's deleted and, you know, not available.
Oh, so you're talking about the Legendary Collection as well?
Yeah.
It's hard to find.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell.
I popped on eBay and managed to get a brand new sealed Legendary Collection DVD for maybe sort of five or six.
Right on.
So I was pleased to find it, that they had some on there. So I just, you know, I bought that one straight away because I've not seen it in a while, and you know, we're going to be doing this, so I thought I had to, really. So
you should own it. It's kind of essential, and good that you're receptive to that kind of a movie, because you need to be. It's a wild time. It's a proper wild time. And we will obviously talk a lot about this on the show, but I value highly, and I'm going to stress that highly, anyone who consistently can provide such energy in his movies. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's true in Men from the Gutter, Seventh Curse, there's a whole bunch of B-movie sci-fi gory energy. Story of Ricky to an extent, yeah. The only problem with that is that it takes itself too seriously. But then he rebounded with his last movie, The Cat, which is fantastic. One of my favorite Hong Kong movies ever.
That I've not actually seen.
You might have seen the scene where a dog and a cat has sort of a kung fu fight, but it's not a real dog and a cat. It's done with stop motion a little bit and cutting, because it's actually a cat from outer space and a super dog, essentially. I have it on my YouTube account, and it's a fantastic scene. No animal cruelty as such. They might have flung the cat a little bit across the ground, you know, but not in a way that was harmful for the cat nor the dog. So it's a really clever sequence, and what a movie to go out on in 1992. So The Cat, starring Wisely. He plays the character Wisely. I like that. Wisely, yes, Wisely.
Yeah, I've heard of the film, but I've never actually seen it.
Oh, it's gonna be a treat, man. If you like Seven Curse, that is gonna rock your world. It's fantastic. Elements of the Body Snatchers in there, which is all good fun as well. And Philip Kwok tearing it up because he becomes possessed by this alien. So such good fun. So I'm looking forward to it. We're not looking ahead to like several profiles, 5-6 profiles in the series, but I'd like to do Lee Chiu-Nam too, because I think people are going to be surprised that he was one of those Taiwan filmmakers that had a knack for energy as well. Shaolin vs. Lam is a great movie, one of the better ones from the Taiwan indie scene, but. You know, when he moved on to like A Life of Ninja with Chen Quan Tai, which is all good fun, and Challenge of the Lady Ninja with Elsa Young, that showed, you know, a distinct fun style. And both of those movies were picked up by Filmark, the rival company to IFD, and presented intact, just with a fairly good dub. And I have them in full widescreen as well, so it's copies I treasure. Copies that turned up in Japan on VHS, English dubbed in full widescreen, which is all good fun. So I'm looking forward to picking another. And if it's Lee Chiu-Nam and a select range of his films, then we have something to do. It's a long series, the director series, but I think if we choose well, then it's not going to feel long and extensive. Being on one director, you know what I mean?
No, it'd be, I mean, like we've already mentioned here, is, you know, No Choice, he didn't stick with the same kind of film, you know, time after time. He did lots of, lots of different kinds of stories and lots of different kinds of movies. And,
yeah, you know, erotic movies even. You know.
Yeah, but with the same, you know, we're still bringing, you know, the same kind of energy, like you're saying, to his films, but just, you know, different kinds of films, but, you know, with that same energy there all the time.
You will probably know that he has a thing for animals in his movies. Not in that way, but, you know, in Killer's Nocturne, we'll get to that one, Chin Siu Ho fights with a kangaroo. Again, yeah, it's true. The cat again with the dog and cat fight, the alien cat versus the super dog, and there was another movie with animals in that regard. But regardless, it's going to be so much fun. I revisit Nam Nai Choi's movies on a regular basis just because they are so much fun and violent and erotic, and the erotic ghost story. Draws heavily on the ending of Witches of Eastwick, or Witches from Eastwick. It has a similar ending to when Jack Nicholson and all the surroundings go batshit crazy.
In that, it's Elvis Choi, is it?
Rotten Coaster, no, he's in some else. No, he's not in the trilogy at all. You know what? You're right in a way. They did a movie called Erotic Ghost Story Perfect Match, which was later on in the late 90s. These movies weren't connected, but this wasn't made, tightly or close to the Erotic Ghost Story trilogy. Only one of which Nam Nai Choi did, which was the first one.
Was he in Seventh Curse?
Elvis?
Yeah.
A lot of people were, because Wong Jing populated that movie with a lot of cameos. So let's just see here. You're right. He plays the sorcerer, for fuck's sake. How could I forget that? The sorcerer Aquela, apparently.
Yeah, I thought I recognized his face beneath all the.
It's a big cameo movie, Cho Yoon, director, Yasuaki Kurata, Wong Jing himself, Johnny Wang, Kara Hoy, Derek Gee. Nina Lee, apparently a lot of apparently Miss Asia winners and candidates in it, which I don't know, it seems like Wong Jing wanted to populate his first movie as producer with as much eye candy and stuff as possible,
I mean that's another very very Hong Kong thing to do, besides from throwing in sort of multiple genres. They'll have like a sort of a cast of thousands as well.
And George Cadenzi, apparently. There's a lot of, if you look at the Hong Kong movie database, it's cameo, 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 guest, cameo. But regardless, it's going to be so much fun. We're not going to bring out our aim material or most material right now, but it's going to be so much fun doing that. Recording soon and coming soon. Also, in short, expect a continuation of the vampire season, as we've said, just waiting for Stu to be able to schedule that so we can go over Vampire versus Vampire, Mr. Vampire 1992, and Magikop. Magikop will be a members-only review. So if you want to hear us talk about Magikop, remember to register on the forum and look for, an extra half an hour of Podcast on Fire, who knows? It's a very fun movie, so we might extend that quite a bit. And also, hopefully at the end of the year, we'll debut the Ikin Hour with a dual reviews of Boys Are Easy and Girls Without Tomorrow 1992, Ikin Cheng's first movies. Not first starring movies, but he's in support, and it's enough to warrant a show, but it's wise, though, to have two movies in one show. And I don't mind revisiting both, especially not Boys Are Easy, which is one of the very, very best Wong Jing movies ever made. And, due to the stars, obviously, Tony Leung-Gafa, Jackie Jung, Bridget Lin, Maggie Jung, Ching Miao, Ikin Cheng, Ken Lo, Richard Jimmy Lin, Taiwanese Jimmy Lin, and Xing Fuyon, and Wu Fung, and a whole roster. And But it's, in my opinion, so much more memorable than anything Wong Jing ever directed, thanks to the sequence showcasing the Triad Olympics. Which, just save it for a moment. Just taste that. Triad Olympics. And it's been such a long time since I watched it, so I hope they had some kind of running event where they were chased by people with, machetes or choppers.
Yeah,
I hope that was the case. But man, I was so blown away by that sequence. It was so much fun. And of course, Xing Fuyon is in that sequence.
Yeah, he's got to be, really, isn't he?
Because, yeah, of course, why not? Big stupid, big silly nose must be in there. Legendary Xing Fuyon. And Girls Without Tomorrow is one of those hostess dramas. It's not a really nice film, actually. Borderlining on Category 3, but it isn't. But Ikin Cheng was in that as well. So playing either in that and or Boys Are Easy, a virgin. And it might have been in both. Actually, his character was a virgin. So who knows? Makes sense now that you look back at it. His first movies. And in Why Wild Girls later on, he was obsessed with playing Nintendo. So it seems like he played a sort of a boy in a grown man's body for a few movies. But he turned up in Triad movies soon enough, and then was Chan Ho Nam out of Young and Dangerous fairly quickly. So it's not a show that aims to make fun of him, not from my side or anything. It's an extension of Stu's fandom. He likes him. He likes Ikin Chen. And that it's as easy as that, you know. Yeah. And it'll be a good chance for us to go through it. It's a show that might never reach the end of his filmography because the network might retire, you never know. But it's a good aim to actually go through his filmography, like two movies at a time or stuff like that. Skipping the cameos, cameo movies, if there were many ones like that. But, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot, and I like quite a bit of his latter work now that he's grown old. I mean, Rule Number One with Sean Yu was a fantastic horror movie, and with a pudgy Ikin Chang, and he's fine. He's more than fine. He's great. So, it's all good. Without going into too much, what's your general thought of Ikin Chang?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, I've got all the Young and Dangerous movies. So, I've probably seen most stuff he's done. I just got I'm Your Birthday Cake as well.
Oh, classic, but not because of him. It's Michael Wong's movie. Never forget that.
But, I mean, I definitely think, you know, he's talking about, you know, Rule Number One. I think he's definitely one of those guys that's kind of the extra years actually doing him a favour.
Oh, yeah.
They give him a bit more kind of, a bit more sort of gravitas, a bit more weight. It just kind of suits him, and it's, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what he goes on to do. Yeah, from here.
Absolutely. So that's been my favorite period. I mean, it's not a pretty boy anymore that you're kind of annoyed by when just looking at him, you know, which was the case of the late 90s movies for me. You know, and then when you put on the movie, it was kind of acceptable, I guess. But when I watched, like, Feel 100%, you know, yeah. I mean, these like almost close to 30s actors, I guess they looked older than they were in the movie. And, you know, the trials of tribulations of young adults and youth. And it was so pointless and annoying and blur. You know, you can make that proper pun, you know. I didn't feel 1% even. I felt 0%. You know, it was such a shit movie. But we'll do that for sure. And give it a go again, and I'll be looking forward to Let's Go Slam Dunk, and you know, great titles like that, and some movies that I want to revisit, like you know, again, Rule Number One and I'm Your Birthday Cake, and you know, romantic comedies like It Had to Be You, which was one of those really enjoyable movies that demanded chemistry between leads, and it got that between Ikin Chang and Karina Lam. So it'll be fun.
Yeah.
And we'll see. It's up to Stu to if he wants to invite anyone else onto that show. He must be on it always, of course, because it's not an Ikin hour without Stu. But it'll be his baby, and I'm glad that he's on, that he wants to do it. And finally, wrapping up network updates, IFD on Fire will, of course, take place. I know I promised that for several months, but it's all due to busy Mike Leader getting gigs and working and trying to find a slot to record IFD on Fire. He's enthusiastic, you know, always remember that. He's the first one who wants to do that show, but we're just waiting for a slot to open up, and as well as for Memories of Murder review on What's Korean Cinema. We started to try and schedule that properly now, see if we can get it done in a few weeks. But when there's multiple people involved, it takes quite a bit to sync up schedules. But it will all happen. It will all be good. The network won't stop, especially not that that we have you two on board, you, David, and Tom. So, you know, and that brings up the question, Robert, you know, if you want to answer it, you know, did you ever have a preference in terms of a show on the network back when you were listening? You know, what did you like some show more than others? Or, you know, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but, you know.
But the regular Podcast on Fire shows have always been, you know, like the tops for me, you know, really. But, you know, in recent times, you know, yourself and King Who's, you know, This Week in Sleaze has become, you know, a firm favourite. Right. You know, if you know, from a purely selfish perspective, you know, I'd like to see, you know, like to hear, you know, loads more, because, you know, you two, you know, just sync together really well, and, you know, you both really know the subject pretty much inside out. So it's
yes, we do it. We know it inside out.
it's such fun to listen to. I mean, I think you did one of the podcasts that you've done, you know, second or maybe third, I'm not quite sure. It was it nearly 3 hours or something like that?
Yeah, the last one we did at the time of recording, which is King of, was the Night of Nights, our Shore Boobies special, that ran almost 3 hours.
I think 3 hours is just, you know, listening to people talk, you know, think, oh, it's going to drag and it's going to be slow. You know, it flew by, because it's been just so much sort of such a sense of sort of fun and like enthusiasm to it that you just, you know, you get sort of swept along, and you know, it's just terrific. I love that.
Oh, good to hear. Thank you. And I like that too. I mean, I like listening to the show. I think it does it flies by, definitely. And if I would have felt that it didn't, then I would have chopped it up. But I think it, seeing as we have segments on that, distinct segments, I think it doesn't demand like a 3 hour listen, because you at the 2 hour mark, then we're done with the main movie usually, and then it's last sleazy movies watched, and that's an hour in itself.
He's a busy guy with a lot on, so you can't, like I was saying, purely selfishly, I like to listen to more, but such is life, you know.
Yeah, we'll be back, we'll promise you that. We're just on a temporary hiatus currently, because I don't want to exclude King Who from it, because he's so much part of This Week in Sleaze, why it works, and of course you can achieve chemistry with a lot of people, but I want King Who on there, so
it works, it really sort of clicks.
And therefore I want to put as little pressure, or rather nada pressure, on him in terms of participating. So it'll be good, especially now that we expand the network, then we don't need to cycle through each, just so each has its exposure every 5, 6, 8 weeks. It might as well be, you know, Podcast of Fire, and then the director's series every other week for multiple months, you know what I mean? It doesn't need to, every show doesn't need to be catered to equally, which is the magic. Okay, we're moving on to, we're doing it very simply tonight, obviously, but there's still good talks to be had. So we're moving on to last movies watched, and I'm going to let you go first, David.
All right, for me, it's Shinsuke Sato's Gantz. It's the first of two live-action films based on the manga by Hiroya Oku. 2.5, I guess, if you include the Japanese TV version of the first.
Right.
That had exclusive scenes. I'm a big fan of the film's lead, Kenichi Matsuyama. But I was, and I remain largely unfamiliar with the manga that spawned it.
I've not heard of it at all. I don't think I haven't seen an image from it. So I hope you have some basic info on it.
I knew a little about that when I watched it, as I did about the Death Note films the first time around. But you know, after having seen those, you know, I've got the anime of that, and
Fuck me, did they do an anime of Death Note as well? Wow.
Yeah, it's like a
juggernaut, you know.
Yeah, it's good.
Many movies and anime, and wow.
Yeah, like 30-40 episode anime.
Wow. Was it a continuation of the movies or remake of the movies?
The movie, you know, like you might expect, is a slightly kind of a boiled down version of the manga of the anime, you know. It's just kind of, it kind of goes to the biggest sort of, set pieces, the most kind of essential kind of information, the kind of, you know, it fills out some of the sort of secondary stories. With Gantz, it's, if you don't like the manga, or, you know, or kind of like long and, you know, really rather quite odd kind of sci-fi. It's pretty much a sci-fi thing. I'm not sure how much mileage you might get out of it, but, you know, I mean, that said, even fans of the manga might not like it, as, you know, its reception has been, you know, a little patchy. But, you know, a lot of things that get adapted from, you know, manga or you know, regular sort of literary adaptations.
Pardon me, David, but when I'm watching Google Images, if I've spelled this correctly, GANDTZ,
yeah,
I'm seeing boobies.
There is a...
I'm seeing big boobs and exposed boobies.
Yeah, there is a nude... there's a partially nude sequence in the film, yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, there's an odd bit where the, you know, different people are being kind of like drawn to this you know, one area, and, you know, different people from different walks of life, and they all, you know, they don't know why they're there, and then, you know, this new young woman kind of materializes in the room in front of them. It's
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's quite a fun sequence. You know, the thing with, you know, adaptations and fans not being happy with adaptations, I mean, you know, not everything that works on the page would work as animation, and not everything that would work as animation is sure to work as sort of live action. So, you mm-hmm. know, you're going to get differences. But, I mean, it's clearly slow moving, and I don't even know that I got the majority of the film first time around, which was... And that was only like yesterday evening, mm-hmm. but it's really well executed. It's quite idiosyncratic for sci-fi. It doesn't just sort of go for sort of the cliche. You know, it's intriguing. You know, it's intriguing enough to make me want to, you know, persevere with it and the sequel. You know, plot-wise, if you don't. Know anything, you can reduce it to you know, after trying to rescue a man on the subway tracks, two teens wake up in a room dominated by a mysterious black sphere that sends them to hunt down and kill aliens hiding on Earth. You know, I mean, it sounds fairly bald, but what they do, you know what they do with that, and what they show you, and the way they sort of pace the story, it's there's more there than that might suggest. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, as much as I was kind of scratching my head a lot of the time, it's intriguing. That, you know, there's enough there that I want to sort of, you know, stick with it. And, you know, I'll get the sequel when it comes to sort of UK DVD and Blu-ray, I think, in February.
How is, like, the manga done? Is, like, is it... You know, is this something that could only be done as a cartoon? You know, is it that fantastical, or is this, you know, prospect, you know, the idea of remaking it live action, you know, suitable or ludicrous?
Do you think? I mean, certainly.
Because, I mean, if you think like Paprika, you know, fuck doing that as live action, you know, no chance.
No, it's you know, story wise, it's, you know. Like I said, it's not, you know, it's not necessarily conventional sci-fi, but it's firmly in that kind of, within that sort of, you know, category of filmmaking. You'd certainly, you know, if you was reading the manga, not that I have, but, you know, I'm somewhat familiar with, you know, the sort of, you know, the, obviously I've seen the film now, but I'm familiar with the idea of the manga, and it's sort of, you know, if you was reading it, you'd think, yeah, you could definitely make a movie out of that. It's not,
mm-hmm.
it's not, you know, completely left field,
right? Okay.
So, but it's just their sort of approach to it, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of slow, but it's you know, it's interesting. So, you know, I'm gonna stick with it and, you know, rewatch it and you know, certainly get the you know, get the sequel. So
right,
it's fun, you know, it's sort of, you know, there's enough there to sort of to hook me. So, you know, I mean, it's certainly not typical of what I watch, so, you know, it's nice to watch something, you know, that's a little different for me, so, you know.
Yeah, it was good to broaden your horizons, of course. Mm. And I like looking at, like, the Google imagery that comes up, aside from the boobies, it's very, you know, metallic and sci-fi and action-oriented in design, yeah. It looks like. You know, because many of the images you see are what I assume are the main characters in, you know, black, you know, robotic suits, if you will.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, it's not colorful in that regard, but you're very, you know, sci-fi in that regard, and you can't really judge by looking at these still images what it's about, or if the nudity is even extensive in the manga. It seems like cheap nudity to some extent, to be honest.
Yeah, the animated version in the film in the UK is rated 15.
Right on. Okay.
You know, 15. You know, 15 and up. So I mean, it's. There's, you know, there's kind of action-orientated kind
yeah.
of...
Yeah, it wasn't like it was necessary, you know, that yeah. If you adapt it, you must include the nudity, otherwise you'll the story will be destroyed. It apparently wasn't akin to that.
No, I mean, in the animated, the anime, you know, the in here in the UK, that's rated 18. So, I mean, that has right been that has been some of the fan... criticism of the live action adaptation is that they kind of scale back on the you know on the violence of the manga. Mm-hmm. They made it a bit more you know, a bit more friendly, you know, slightly more mass market, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But
how recent is the manga and anime, approximately anyway? I mean, is it 20 years old, or has it been done during the last 10 years?
I think it's very recent. Right. And the films themselves only came out in sort of, you know, Japan and the rest of Asia at the beginning of this year.
Right.
But they are pretty much, you know, hot the presses. You know, I mean, in terms of it could come into sort of you know, DVD and Blu-ray here in the UK. Well, you know, it's about as quick as it gets, really. You know, within the same calendar year that's, you know, it doesn't usually get any quicker than that.
Yeah, that speaks to there's a demand in the UK still. I mean, it's quite fascinating that anime has been big for so many decades in the UK.
Yeah.
I mean, I first got a taste of it thanks to my friend owning a lot of stuff on tape, but not tape released here, tape released in the UK. You know, and that wasn't cheap to own, because then you had like two, maybe three episodes of these 20 minute per episode type of series. You know, your Crying Freeman, your Guyver, and a few movies here and there, but it was all UK, and it seems like that has never stopped.
The anime fan community is pretty extensive. You know, they have they're sort of regular kind of conventions, exhibitions, whatever in London. You know, sort of cosplay the whole bit. You know, it's quite a big thing.
Were you ever into the naughty aspects of manga? I actually wasn't. Yeah, I didn't like the Urutsuki Doyoi and the hentai and stuff like that. I was always into Akira
I mean, some of the some of the stuff that actually made it here, some of the more extreme, you know, kind of
porn.
Yeah, but yeah, basically, so, you know, some of the more extreme things actually, you know, made it to sort of, you know, got sort of genuine sort of just distribution here were cut quite heavily.
Right.
You know, because I mean, it's still true now, but it was even more so under sort of previous administrations at the you know, British Board of Film Classification. They were really heavy on you know, anything sort of that was could be considered sexually orientated violence and
especially like involving youths as well, because obviously a lot of them, it looks like minor age girls in these animes that are abused and shit like that.
Yeah, they used to be like super hard on that. I mean, they're, you know, slightly more forgiving now, I think, but for a while, you know, there was some of the more, you know, some of the sort of the adult end of the spectrum just got you know, just got hacked to bits. Is, you know, they're only like, you know, relatively short episodes, mm-hmm. you know, these things, but they'd, you know, they'd be cut by whole minutes, you know, out of each episode.
Yeah, I probably watched a cut version of Urut Sukiduya, Legend of the Overfiend.
Yeah.
It still sucked. and my friend was so into it. He said, like, this is such a meaningful story and dark story about, you know, dark forces taking over. And, like, in the first minute, I'm seeing, you know, sperm on screen. And, you know, even today, I'm not really interested in that. It just looked dull. It was dull.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, look for intelligent stimulation via anime, but I still like Akira and Ghost in the Shell and those kind of movies much more as experiences, and they do trigger my brain a little bit, you know what I mean? Gaiba I did like, though. I got a lot of takes from my friend who was moving to England, back to England. So he said, like, you can take any VHS you'd like, and he had the entire Gaiba, or one series of Gaiba that was the one probably that was released at the time in the UK. Good fun. I enjoyed that. It was like two short episodes per tape, I think. So that fucking tape collection was huge. And probably expensive as hell to buy per tape at the time. But that was good fun. I like Gaiba. Fist of the North Star was always good fun.
Yeah, that was
good gory fun.
Yeah, definitely seen. They did there's a live action version, right? As well,
no? Yeah, I don't imagine that as being as gory.
It was who was it?
Gary Daniels.
Gary Daniels, yeah. And
fucking Malcolm McDowell was in it as well.
Yeah, I think Chris Penn at some point as well.
Okay, right on.
It's quite annoying.
It might be fun, but I like the thought of Fist of the North Star being uber gory.
Yeah.
Rather than scaled down, but whatever. So, any more notes on Gantz for the moment?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, if you kind of fancy trying something that's kind of, you know, kind of a little slow paced here and there, but you know, it's not boring. Just kind of moves, you know, in a very kind of its own way. It takes its own time. It's like 2 hours plus.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
2 hours 10, I think the sequel's nearly 2.5.
Wow.
So, but you know, I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, if you don't mind a bit of sci-fi, and you know, it's not something I watch a lot of, but you know, I kind of like the look of it. I saw the trailer and I thought, well, you know, I'll give it a try, and you know, and it's, I think I definitely go back and you know, want to rewatch it, try and
that's a good sign.
Yeah, try and make a bit more sense out of it. So.
yeah, exactly. You weren't like frustrated by it.
You'd
like to go back to it.
Yeah,
that's a good
like,
sign.
Try and get more out of it.
So. Cool. Right on. Yeah, we'll see if I encounter it or not. It's obviously nothing that was on my radar, but I do recognize the cover when I watching the Google images from of the UK DVD. So it must have I must have seen it to some extent, and you know, it's familiar when I watch it. So. I've otherwise not seen a frame of it, so we'll see. Yeah. When I spoke to Tom, we talked about Lucky Seven, and you know, annoying Taiwanese kids is the theme with that review and movie, and we'll continue that because I watched Lucky Seven 2. That was made a few years after the initial Lucky Seven. A Taiwanese movie, it seems like it probably is like a Hong Kong Taiwanese movie, but it has the feel of a Taiwanese production a lot more. So, you know, I had the pleasure and also huge displeasure of watching this series, and the pleasure comes at the end of Lucky 7 when they start treating the kids like real stuntmen, meaning they start hurting them essentially.
Oh man.
And the second one is better. They learned something over the years. That director was the same director, a director called Chu Chan Kwok. And you know, a couple of years of thinking, you know, managed to hone the filmmaking vision, if you like. So the original Lucky 7 was a lazy live cartoon for the family, and that's fine, but it didn't convey. The problem was that they conveyed like that the kids could like fight adults and take out adults, and there was no power behind that. I'm not saying I want Sammo Hung like power, but there was no realism within a movie reality. It was just a lazy live action cartoon undercranked to the max, and that's, it didn't work. It wasn't fun. It was kind of obnoxious and boring. You know, imagine like the whole movie, you know, being like undercranked Benny Hill style, you know. Only for a full movie almost, until the very end, which was good in that movie. And that they realized that treat the kids as adult stuntmen and you'll get you know, you'll get more audience in. And that mentality helps Lucky 7 too. And sure, there's still a lot of cartoony and juvenile humor in this movie, but the energy and the atmosphere is a lot more fun this time around, 4 years later. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I won't try and explain the plot in detail, but essentially you see the group of kids are essentially sent to military school, and this whole sequence is kind of a, you know, a stripped down Full Metal Jacket for kids, aside from the murder and suicide though. And they are drilled hard with their drill sergeant, but their drill sergeant gets physically beaten up and blown up in the process, because there's a gag with a hand grenade that gets repeated and repeated and repeated. But they do it kind of geniusly, because I like that it got you know, increased. It wasn't just that he blew up. At one time, only his shoes were left after the smoke had cleared, and it was kind of fun. They finally managed to tap into that atmosphere and energy that wasn't all about that lazy choice of having everything undercranked and every adult chasing the kids falling down easily and very embarrassingly, you know, as was the case in the first one. And to an extent, yeah, it's still a live cartoon, but with more thought and snap to it, and only mildly obnoxious, which is a huge win over the first one. And overall, I will recommend Lucky 7 to, you know, very, very highly. And again, the comedy is shot down to crank the points as well, but the action is kept logical film speed wise. And now, initially, you see that the kids feel and look like they have a bit more power, because these are good acrobatic kids. I should state that they are not like, you know, embarrassingly doubled by tiny stuntmen or anything. You know, some of these kids are really acrobatic, and they managed to pull off the fact that they have power, that they could probably fight these adults that they are fighting. And that's a good sign. And contrasting all of this, you know, in the military school and the action is the kidnapping plot headed by Yukari Oshima. And it's fun because I finally get to see her play a villain again, which she did in Angel, which was fun to see. She was a very sexually charged villain in Angel. Here, she's just a villain, so to say, but still a villain. I like Yukari. She seems to have fun with getting a chance to play outside the box, if you will. And she has a few good action sequences, and her henchmen are actually not henchmen, they're henchwomen, which is all fun. Leather-clad henchwomen, which is also good fun. And they when the kids try and fight them, they obviously just hold them off easily. You know, the kids have to figure out different ways to fight them, so that involves slingshots as well. And still, they are thrown around a bit, these kids, and but they contrast this with adults fighting too. Therefore, the actual stuntmen and fighters get a workout as well, a fair workout. I think the end reel in the first one was actually better, though. But still, overall, Lucky 7 2 is a lot more entertaining and a perfectly sufficient comedic action time, where there's some ouch moments every now and again, spread evenly throughout the majority of the cast. You know, young and old. It's not sadistic what they do to these kids, obviously. There's only a shot in the first movie where a young girl and a young boy goes through glass. Sugar glass, obviously, but still glass, you know. And it seems like, I hope the parents weren't watching that stunt. Because it you know, think kind of like when Bridget Lynn goes through the glass in Police Story at the end of the Police Story. It's, you know, it does seem to hurt a bit, and there's no way to fake that, you know. So, but it's a pleasure watching it. It's not like I wanted these kids to die or anything, but it's a pleasure watching watching someone else's pain on celluloid sometimes. And I wanted the first movie to have that identity crisis, if you will, to be, you know, to hurt a little bit. Yeah. And thankfully it did. And but Lucky 7-2 has a little bit of that, but it's a lot more thought out in terms of comedy and action, and it has more recognizable cast, which I think helps as well. Yukari Oshima, as I said, also Philip Coe is in it for a bit. So the first one didn't have any recognizable cast. Wonder Kids was called Bullshit. That was about as much fun as
great name.
Yeah, they were all like the seven kids were all, you know, different stupid names, and even was a ninja. Ninja kid in this. So the first one I think was called one of the AKAs was like Seven Lucky Ninja Kids.
Oh,
but there was only one. but it's good fun. It's not the very available stuff. I saw bootlegs of it. But if you know your torrent sites, then you should probably get these, because they're never bound to have an English an official DVD release anytime soon. They are forgotten movies in that regard. And the first one is a dubbed print, perfectly sufficient dub. And the second one I saw is a subtitled print that is also very very watchable. So if you're not allergic to VHS. And when you're collecting old Hong Kong and Taiwanese movies, you shouldn't be. Then it should be all good. So based on that, I thought of like a minor question that I didn't require any research on, just a spontaneous answer. So, you know, kids in movies, or rather kids in action movies, David, yay or nay?
I don't know. It's a tricky one, you know, because they have to sort of. You know, you have to be a bit, a bit more creative than you would might otherwise be. You know, because you know, obviously you can't put them in too much kind of, you know, danger, and you know, I don't know.
Apparently you can in Asia. You can, you know, look, parents, money, and then like talk to the AD on the other side. Go, throw them through the glass now. I got them distracted.
Remember there's the little kid in. Oh, was it My Father is a Hero, the Jet Li?
Chiam Yu, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he did a few other things as well.
Yeah, he's in God of Gamblers Return, I think, that little kid, Chiam Yu. And, I was going to mention him because in terms of Asian movies or Hong Kong movies, you have mainly, you know, that kid in My Father is a Hero. No, not My Father is a Hero, by the way, David, shame on you. It's called My Father is a Hero.
Oh,
that's what's on the print, and that's what it's called. So, don't you dare!
I could call it My Father the Hero, which is the French movie.
So. I would have liked that mistake too. Yeah, but also the Shaolin Pope movies movie.
I've seen those.
One of the main one is called Six Yu Long. Perfectly sufficient, like kids in terms of, you know, acrobatic quality, but the problem is for the Shaolin Pope movies, they're put into kids movies, you know, childish kids movies. Yeah. So you know, do you think there is a place for putting them into serious movies if they have the physical ability to keep up, you know, with the Koryun and Jet Li?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, there's a place where it's got to be, you know, directors and, you know, the you know, the, everyone kind of making the films really got to, you know, be a bit, you know, really quite creative with it. I was, mm-hmm. you know, you tend to sort of, you know, you fall back on, you know, you just had the kids being cute or, you know,
peeing themselves and vomiting and
you kind of get stuck in those kinds of familiar
which is certainly the case with Lucky Seven movies. There's definitely multiple peeing jokes and all of that, so which in the second one is still a bit of fun though, but yeah, but the problem with Shaolin Pope movies, one of the kids was, you know, acrobatics, 6 year long, and the other one was fat. So yeah. that's the extent of the joke.
Yeah.
Which is lazy. You know, the first Shaolin Pope movie, or Popeye movie, or however you want to pronounce it, it's okay. No, it's not really okay. You can't watch it, but and it was directed by Chu Yanping. The second one is a lot more fun, though, because at the very end, the things turn crazy, you know, supernaturally crazy, which is a sign of a good Chu Yanping movie, the director of Island of Fire, Golden Queen's Commando, and a lot of crazy New Wave Wuxia movies. So that one was better, but it wasn't reliant on the kid. The kid happened to be part of the cast, and you know, a good part of the cast. So for a while, a reel or two, obviously there was that creativity put forth that you are referencing.
Mm.
But in terms of, you know, yay or nay, it depends. It could be good, but at this time there weren't a lot of focus on making it good. But you know, having said that, My Father Is Hero, I didn't feel it was out of place. It was kind of a serious movie too, if I remember correctly, and not bad at that. You know, kind of a father son thing there. They had Anita Moy to bring in a bit of class into the acting department that I thought it was rather good.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely sort of, it was, you know, it was integrated. It was part of, it was like saying it's part of the story. So, you know, it kind of made sense. It wasn't like just sort of, tacked on to try and get a sort of, to get another, you know, a bit more audience, you know, a different audience in. Yeah, it was actually, you know, it made sense. You know, it was integral. So.
Definitely. Yeah, and God of Gamblers Return was one of the other movies that this kid was in. But Chen Yu, who I think is interviewed on like the Dragon Dynasty DVD of My Father Is Hero.
All right.
Who interviewed on some other DVD, now a bit more grown up and all of that. I think it was maybe 10 years old, 13 years old, mid-90s or something like that. So it's not a subject I keep track of extensively, but just a minor one I thought of when watching these movies. So could be very obnoxious, could be put to good use if you start hurting them, I guess. That's the, you know, Hong Kong and Taiwan filmmakers are shameless in that regard. Yeah. You know, and union rules and stuff like that, that doesn't apply to children either, so. You know, they could be put through some quite harsh stuff too. Hopefully not too harsh though, to cripple them for life or anything. But I like what I saw in these movies. Yay! They were thrown through glass. I like that. it's a sadism in me that awakens, you know, because that first movie just needed to perk up somehow. Mm. And thank you for the classic thing of, you know, the final reel being the best thing of the movie that happened. So you got like 10 minutes of good stuff, and therefore I'll happily rewatch that someday. Like a 7-2 more often than not. And no, it's a case two of the first movie being just 82 minutes, felt long. Second movie, 91, 92 minutes, didn't feel long at all. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot of difference, but it is a lot of difference. You know, movies can feel like a big, big old trek, even below 90 minutes.
Oh yeah, I mean it's you know, it's totally like dependent on, you know, the people making the film, you know, the story, their approach, you know, it sort of, you know, you can have a short film feel long and a long film feel short, you know, it's just depends who's made it.
Yeah, we had that example with Undefeatable versus Bloody Mary Killer that we did for the commentary.
Mm.
You know, the shorter edit was the big trek.
Yeah,
and the longer one was no problem at all.
Yeah,
it's all good fun. Recommend both of them just to see something different, I guess. When I posted it on Facebook, it got a lot of attention. People like the idea of some kid action movies. So, you know, at one point, it felt right, I guess, and in the hands of. Asian filmmakers, to some people, initially without knowing anything about the movie, it feels right. So maybe I've attracted some viewers to Lucky 7. So hopefully more to Lucky 7 too than anything else. But it's all good fun. We're done. We're essentially done. So contact info and then we'll sign off. So you've been listening to Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network, the Anchor Show. And we are located at podcastonfire.com. Visit our forum at podcastonfire.com/ forum where you can interact with us and also take part of and listen to the extensive members only package ready there for you, all free and all good and extensive and meaty and mighty. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/POF network. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/podcast on fire. My site where I do my writing and video reviews are the following: sogoodreviews.com, sleazykvideo.com, and I also am present on the Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. Subscribe to our iTunes feed, present in the show post and on the site, and download Stitcher at stitcher.com and listen to us on Stitcher Radio on the go. So we are there in multiple ways. We used to do this kind of thing back in the day where we plugged not only ourselves but we plugged stuff that we like in general. So putting you on the spot, David, is there anything you'd like to plug? You know, your Hong Kong gig guide, by the way. I forgot to mention at the top of the show. So what's going on with the Hong Kong gig guide on Facebook?
I'm in on that pretty much every day, kind of checking out, see if there's any new shows for me to put up, any more info. So you know, if anyone still wants to check it out, you can just search on Facebook, Hong Kong Gig Guide. My own personal page, you know, I'm the David Harris that's pretty much all over the Podcast on Fire page on Facebook. So
like. You like a lot, David. We like that.
So if anyone wants to sort of leave me some feedback on the audition tape, or you know, on the commentary when it comes out, that'd be great. So yeah, just that's the way to do it.
Yeah, good man. Righto, we're done. Podcast, another Podcast on Fire in the bag. So I've been your main host, Kenneth Bolson, and the co-host with me this time was David Harris, Hong Kong Dave. So say bye, Dave.
Bye, all.
I prod you like a monkey. Say bye, Dave. Now we're <bzzz. laughs> Bye. He's hurting me.
Back in.
Let me out. I don't want to be here anymore. Ah! Get back in the cage. You'll only be let out when I say you will be let out. You'll podcast and like it. And you do. You like it a lot. I like.